Okay, we continue in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. We are now on Perek Hay. The Jews have lost a terrible defeat at the hands of the Plishtim. Many people were killed. Chafni and Pinchas die. The Aron is taken. Eli dies. Eli's daughter-in-law dies. Names the child Ikavod. And we move now, the next two chapters, Hay and Vav, will deal with the Ark in captivity in the hands of the Plishtim. And we'll see how God responds to all this. Perek Hay, Pasuk Aleph. Uflishtim lochu et Aron Elokim. And the Plishtim took the Ark of Hashem. V'yiviyuhu me'Evan ha'Ezer Ashtod. And they took it from Evan ha'Ezer, the Philistinian city of Ashdod. Okay, Pasuk Beis. And when they were in Ashdod, Vayichu Plishtim es Aron Elokim, and the Plishtim took the Ark of Hashem, Vayaviu Oso Beis Dagon, and they took it to the house of Dagon. Dagon was the name of their idol. So it was the house of their idol, their idol house. V'yad sigu oso etzel Dagon. And they stood up, they set up the Aron HaKodesh next to Dagon. Now, the Radak explains a little bit later on that Dagon was sort of like a male mermaid, where it was had human features, part human features, and part fish features. It had a fish part, I guess the bottom was like a fish, and the top had a head, and had arms like a human being. That's what Dagon was. Now, you remember, now, Ashdod is a port city, and we already said that the Plishtim were seafarers, they were sailors. So obviously they wanted to have such an idol. The idol would reflect the ocean, the sea, and their human aspect, which we'll discuss a little bit later on, perhaps some ideas about that. But the question is, why did they put the Ark over there? So the Malbim brings down a machlokes in the Gemara. There's a machlokes, two different opinions, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says that they were giving kavod to the Aron. They were giving it honor, because it's Jewish God. They thought it's a Jewish God. It's fitting to be next to the Philistine God. That's one opinion. I'm sorry, that was Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says they honored it. This is a God. Reish Lakish says, is this the honor? So why did they get punished? We're going to see in a minute the Plishtim get punished. So if they were honoring the Ark, why should they get punished? It says, rather they were dishonoring the Aron, and they're saying, this is the victor, this is the vanquished, put the vanquished next to the victim. Trying to show that the Ark wasn't special at all. So, therefore, so it's a machlokas, but it makes more sense to say the second shot, of course, as the Malbim brings the both shuts them down and says, because you know, we know the Philistines didn't have any love for the Jewish people, and certainly not for their God either. So maybe they gave it some respect. So it could be both shut them down. We're going to respect this God, but it's a lower God than our God. We don't put it in the garbage dump because it is a God and it has certain powers, but our God is stronger. So we'll put it a subservient to our God next to our God. Okay, so Hashem really didn't like that. So Pasuk Gimel. So they go, they put it in the house of idol worship, they go to sleep, and the next morning, Vayashkimu Ashtodi Mimochros, the people from Ashto get up the next morning. Hine Dagon Nofel Lufanov Arzo Lifne Aron Hashem. And behold, an amazing thing happened. The idol of Dagon fell before the ark, and the Malbim explains it was like a double miracle. Now, you figure, if you have, let's say there's the door, and here's the Dagon, and here's the Ark. So if the Dagon would fall, let's say it was just a tremor, right? A little earthquake. So if the Dagon would fall, how would it fall? Fall forward, on its face, and facing the door. So a typical, you know, fall would be like this. But what they saw is that the Dagon was Azoy. It was facing towards the ark, and not backwards, but up, its face up. So it's like the double opposite of what a typical, it would fall, or if it was falling to the ark, but it was totally reversed, meaning as if to say it was like almost bowing down to the ark. Okay? That's how the Malbim explains it. He says that they were both standing opposite the door. If it would fall just from a mikra, from a happening, so it would fall on its face and would fall towards the door, not towards the ark. And so that's one thing. And also, if it was falling towards the ark, it would probably fall on its side. Let's say, even if you want to say it felt there, it would fall this way. But it wasn't even to the ark. It was like totally the other way, facing, as if it was positioned in another place even beforehand. So therefore, that was an amazing double barrel miracle there. And obviously, it didn't fall by itself. It must have been a miracle. It should have already done shuv immediately. So what do? They act as if nothing happened. By yikles dagon, they took dagon, by yishiva sulam, they put it back in its place. That's odd. But they don't like react. Hashem always gives you a little warning. Dalit. By yishkima vavokar mimarchus, they get up the next morning, second morning. Vinei dagon nafelafanav artzel ifnaran Hashem. Again, dagon falls before the ark of Hashem in a miraculous way, but now more. Verosh dagon, now the head of dagon, ushtei kapos yadav, and its two hands, krusos alamifton, were chopped off by the threshold. Rak dagon nishar alav. And the only one that's left is dagon. In other words, they now see the dagon was at the threshold. Again, another miracle. Again, it fell in a similar way as the day before, turned totally around and facing the Mishkan. That was miracle one, well, double miracle one. And the second miracle is that the head and the hands are cut off by the doorpost, not by the Aron, as if to maybe make it think that maybe the Aron had a fight with Dagon and beat up Dagon and chopped Dagon to bits, so the hands were next to the Aron, but rather at quite a distance, right? And then, so the body parts were by the threshold, but the fish part was further up, falling down before the ark. So it was in two parts. I say the threshold is here, the ark is here, the body parts are here, and the fish part is facing over here. It's an amazing double miracle. Okay. So you figure that by now they for sure should make some kind of reaction. So let's see what their reaction is. So, they're ready to make some kind of reaction. But not the kind we would have liked to have seen. Plus, okay, Al Kain, therefore, because of that amazing thing, Lo Yidrichu Chola Negoin Dagon, Chola Boim Beis Dagon, Al Mifton Dagon, Vashtod Ad Yom Hazeh. Therefore, the priests of Dagon, and for that matter, anybody else who goes to Dagon, nobody walks over the threshold of the house of Dagon in Ashdod until today. So why is that so? So Ralbag says in Pasuk Dalet, because they felt that the threshold itself must be holy, because they found the head and the hands on the threshold. Must be something holy about it if it's over there. Well, the Malbim gives a different interpretation. They figured there must have been a third god involved over here. The third god is the god of the threshold. The god of the threshold. And that's why Dagon's body parts were on the threshold. So you see how far their idol-worshipping natures would stretch things, anything but not to admit that it's Hashem. Right? To say it was Hashem? No way. So that, of course, obviously, you already had two warnings, and they totally don't heed the warnings at all. And this obviously gets Hashem quite upset. And the balance of the parak will tell us all the punishments he now will give to the plishtim. So before we go on with this chapter, there's a very nice piece from Rav Tzadok that we can look at that I think will be quite instructive. Okay, I think. Rav Tzadok discusses something not related to this, but we can connect it to it. We're talking about the Ark. You're going to see some similarities, what's going on with the Ark, what's going on with the Plishtim and the Yidden, and you know why the Ark is taken into captivity, what's the significance of the Ark taken into captivity. So you have to know a little bit about the Ark, and we'll understand this a little better. Okay, so this Reb Tzadok is in Sefer Pri Tzadik. That's his Sefer on the different parshios. It's on Parshas Truma that deals with the Mishkan and the utensils. Os Ches. So it says in the pasuk there, "Vitzipisa osa zahav tahor mibayis imachutz titzpana." We know the Ark had three compartments of the walls. There was a when you looked at the box from the outside, it was gold. You looked at the box from the inside, it was gold. But the gold on the outside and the inside was covering up what was in the middle? Wood. What kind of wood? What was it called in Hebrew? Atzei shitim. Shitim wood. Okay. So Pirish Rashi. Rashi explains. Gimel Aronos Asa Betzal. Betzal made three boxes. A box within a box within a box. Shnayim Shel Zov. Echad Shel Eitz. Two of gold and one of wood. V'kachu B'gemara. That's based on a Gemara. V'ra'im in the Mizrahi commentary on Rashi. Hevi, he brings Shetama Harav Evan Ezer. He brings a question from the Evan Ezer. Da'acha Shasa Aron Zov. Once you're making the ark out of gold, mat sarach leitz, what do you need the wood for? Just make the whole thing gold. Finished. Hilarious, that reminds you of the parsha class we did a number of months ago, the one that you were very fascinated with. So we're coming back to this. Because, right? And because the shar keli mekurashim, all the other utensils and the beams, shahayu shel eitz, that were made out of wood, hayurak metzupim zav, they were just coated with gold. Okay, so gold plated is one thing. But the arch, aron zav, it was really gold. According to one rabbi in the Gemara, ovev tefach, it was thick a tefach, this thick. That's a lot of gold. So on the tzarech leitz, what do you need the tree, the wood for at all? So we gave a different interpretation at that alternative class, but the Tzadok says an amazingly different shot. But the concept, as we find in the Medrash Tanchuma, it says b'mizbeach shenase me'atze shitim, that the altar was made from wood of shitim. Why? You know why that type of wood? Shitim was that? I think cedar wood. I think I'm not exactly sure what kind of wood it is. You could check. On an acacia wood, basically. I wouldn't know the difference. But a specific kind of wood. But it's called shitim. Okay, does the word shitim ring a bell to anybody? It's a city. What happened at that city? It's not that long ago. We had it in the Parsha. It was 2 weeks ago. It was the end of Parsha's Bullock. The Jewish people came to Shittim, and that's when the Midianite and Moabite women seduced the men. And 24,000 men were seduced and did the worshipping of the Baal Peor. It was a very low point of the Jewish travelings. Right? And that's what Parshas Pinchas is follows up, and Pinchas stood up against that. So Shittim, if you recall, that's also when Yehoshua sent spies out to the land. He sent it from Shittim as a tikkun for the Avera. And now this is what the Medrash says. Well, so now you remember Shittim, okay? The Medrash says, the Mizbeach, Shenasim, Atzi Shittim, the Mizbeach, the altar was also made out of Shittim wood. The Yavo, Atzi Shittim, Yechapro, Al Shtusan. Let the Shittim, Shittim is from the same root of the word Shtus, which is foolishness. And obviously it has to do with the Shtus, you know, that would, you know, different Shtuyot that happened to Jewish people. Now, when they built the ark, it was before the story of Shittim, but obviously Shittim represents the ultimate of a shtus, the ultimate foolishness, is for a man to want to be with a Midianite woman and to worship their idols. That's the ultimate foolishness. And that's what the Mizbeach is all about. The Mizbeach is primarily for kapara, for atonement. What do we need atonement for? We need atonement for the shtuyot, the silliness, the foolishness of what we do. So Gemara says, my loshon shitim, etc. What does it mean, the expression of shitim? Shitim asku v'divrei shtus. They engage themselves in issues of foolishness. Behind the Gemara, that's what the Gemara Sota says. Ein adam over aver elim ken nichmas bo ruach shtus. No one does an aver unless the spirit of foolishness comes over them, as it says by the Eisha Sota, the woman who goes away from the path of her husband, says, Ish ish ki sista isha, that his wife is sista, she goes off the path, she acts foolishly. So now what does an avera have to do with foolishness? So now Reb Tzadok explains beautifully. He says, the inyan ha-taiva hu be'emes shtus. Anybody who runs after taiva, anyone who runs after base pleasures, drives and lusts, it truly is foolish. Why? Vitipshus, also a very strong word for foolishness, idiocy. Why? Shudavar mos, because it's a disgusting thing. The Gemara says, Isha chamas mole. A woman looks after a man is chasing after him. What's a woman, you know, from an anatomical level? It's a piece of flesh, you know, blood, guts. Chop up a woman into bits. What do you got? Not much different than a man. Well, what's there to lust after? Like, what is it already? Right? Merely flesh and blood and guts. Right? And this is what you get so excited about? Right? Because a woman is amazing, but if you just look at the physical things, like, physical is like so nothing. You know, you want to say spiritual. Oh, Eishes Chayil. It's a different story, but that's not what people don't lust after an Eishes Chayil. Usually not. And, can't imagine people lusting after, you know, very frumpy-looking Beis Yaakov girls. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you're lusting after people that look attractive, where there's a lot of flesh for you to lust after. So what's there to lust from flesh? Flesh is just bones and blood and guts. Right? We love this person. Let's look inside what's in her. Let's see if you can match. You say, you really love me? What's inside here? I'll cut myself up. Go. Get lustful over the organs that are spewing forth the Lord. That's what you're lusting for? You're lusting over the packaging. The nice ribbons. But essentially, what's a human being? Physically, just physically. Right? That's what it's saying. Hudavar nitzav umzuham. It's a disgusting, repulsive thing. V'hachote misa'ev atzmo bishvil milu taivosa rega echod. And the sinner, he has a drive. He wants so much, what, to fulfill the pleasures of a moment. How long is the pleasure for already? Is this years and years of pleasure? It's eternal bliss. Just a minute. And what happens? Umasid tov olam haba, and you're losing your whole eternity for that. Yeah, the person's running after a beautiful woman that he shouldn't be running after. So how long's the pleasure going to be already? One night. What do you get for that? You lose your whole olam haba. There can't be anything more foolish than that. Giving up eternal existence for an ephemeral pleasure. It's crazy. Ubishitim kilkalu b'masapor. And it was in Shittim itself where they wrecked themselves up by worshiping that idol for Peor. It's like the dumbest thing you could do. Okay, do you understand why an avera is such a foolish thing to do? What do you get out of an avera at the end of the day? So you, let's say you have a taiva to take revenge on somebody. So you get the revenge. So you, the sweet, cold taste of revenge, how long does it last? How long, you know, when they're going to, next Sunday night, when the one country will celebrate the winning of a World Cup, how long will that celebration last? How long can it go? A day, two, you know, they get drunk, kill a few people, rob, mob, loot. Okay, so finally, you know, to finally sober up after 2-3 days, then what? There's no more games to watch. It's all over. That's what's all. So it's a foolish thing, and to sin in order to do it as well. So that's v'zeo inyan aron atzei shitim. This is the idea of the ark that's made out of the shitim wood. Shemarameis neged yetzahara, because it's hinting to the yetzahara. Which one? The taiva of taiva. There's a yetzahara. There's different yetzaharas. And the base, most base yetzer is to just go after your lusts. Shomer the Gemara says, "Shemitzgara b'Talmud Chacham Yosher Mikula." We are told is a principle of the Talmud. Kol haGodol mechavero yitzra Godol hameno. Someone who is greater than his friend, he has a greater yetzahara. And it's based on a Gemara in Sukkah where it says that the truth of the matter is the yetzer hara for lust. Who does it run after more than anyone else, believe it or not? It runs after a Torah scholar. Now, and now this can begin to explain, of course not to justify, but it can explain why you could occasionally find great Torah scholars fall in terrible, terrible averos. It's not the rule, but it's possible. How could it be? How could, you know, yes, unfortunately, mises were, rabbinical figures get involved in very unpleasant activities. It's based on a rule, as we continue, call a godel mechaver yitzel godel haimenu. If you're bigger than someone else, you have a bigger yitzhar. On the simple level, we say it's because you have to have an equal playing field. If a great person doesn't have a yitzhar, then there's no challenge. There's got to be big challenges. Now, Lahavin, now he's going to give you the deeper understanding. So it's a beautiful piece. Lahavin, lama miskara yoser b'talma chacham. Why does the Yetzer, fight more with the Talmud Chacham? Ubegadol yia Yitzer Gadol. And why does a big person have a bigger Yetzer? He says, Achen kvar amarnu, we already explained. The Yetzer, what is the whole purpose of the Yetzer? What's the real purpose of the Yetzer? Now, of course, Yetzer is trying to tempt us to doing bad things. But obviously, everything God creates has to be able to be used in a positive way. How can you use the Yetzer in a positive way? How can you, this drive, now let's take lust and let's boil it down to the least common denominator. You know, let's strip away the lust for what it's lusting for, but let's just look at the power of lust. Just the pure, raw power of lust is what, a power of what? What is it? What?
Desire.
It's a desire, but what kind of desire?
For pleasure.
It's a desire for pleasure, and the effort one will exert for getting that pleasure. So in a very negative way, I'll give a very negative example. A man sees a beautiful married woman, and he wants this woman. But she is happily married to her husband. He's going to have to work very hard to sway her away from her man to come to him. And it could take a lot of effort. You know, not always comes easy to get your pleasures. A person wants to have certain taivas, wealth. You're going to work very hard, put in 70-hour weeks to make the money, to close the business deals, to now be able to buy your private island in the Bahamas for that pleasure, right? So, you know, taiva requires, you know, a drive of conquest, a drive of, you know, because you just can't just sit back and just the pleasures come. You got to make some work to get the pleasure. You know, most pleasures don't come by you sitting around and doing nothing. You know, sleeping is not a taiva. Just sitting, not getting up, that's not a taiva. That's just stam lazy. It's not slowness. It's not taiva. Taiva is your blood pressure is higher. Your heart is beating. I've got to have this. I must have this. Right? You know, you're going to drive 50 miles to go to an exotic restaurant. You know, while you could have a meal right in the house. Why do you have to drive far away to a restaurant? Why do you have to go all the way down to Eglinton to spend over $100 to have a meal? When you could have a nice steak dinner at home, will cost you a quarter the price. Nah, but it's the effort that you have to make. It's the effort to take some pleasure that's far away from you and to conquer it and to make it part of you. Now, that's true. Now, what's the greatest pleasure? The greatest pleasure is being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, how do you access that greatest pleasure? We already discussed this past Shabbos. It's through Asak HaTorah. Asak HaTorah, working hard on Torah. So that's what God gave you a Yetzirah for. To sublimate it for the ultimate. You know, understanding a piece of Gemara is not easy. But if you want it, if you have a drive for it, you know, figure the drive that people have for Averos and just use that drive in a strong way to learn Torah. Do you know what kind of scholar you could be? So we had a Rebbe once said, if you would try as hard on Gemara as you did in baseball, you'd be a Talmud Chacham. Right? That you know, you can't learn. Torah is hard to learn. It's not easy. You look at it, you want to forget it. So you have to have a drive. You have that drive, that cheshek. That's what it says. The Yetzer Hainu cheshek. The Yetzer is a cheshek. A cheshek, how do you translate? Yearning, a real wanting, drive. Kamo Shiyomar, the Pasuk says, the Yetzer Machshavos Levav Amecha. Shashem Yizbarach Baras Adam the Yetzer. Hashem created every human being with a Yetzer. Shemeshukaba Inyan Chemda. That it's deeply sunk in the person, the concept of desire. Every human being has the ability to want something badly. That's time. Now, that's cheshek, that's yetzer. When it's done wrong, then it becomes taiva. But v'habechira, it's in the underlines, v'habechira nesuna la'odam l'hachnis achemda l'ktusha o l'hepechas v'cholilu. And your free will choice is given to you to decide which direction do you want to steer that desire. For holiness or for the opposite, God forbid. And like by the Mabul, for example, Shekilkalu, where they were destructive, Ksivit says, V'chol Yetzer Machshavos Libo Rak Rakol Ayom. It says that the Yetzer, the drive of the thoughts of the hearts of man at that time by the Dor HaMabul, was only bad all day long. Shehichnisu HaCheshek Lachem Darak L'Rali in Yenataiva. They used the power of Cheshek and desire only for bad to fulfill their Taivas. That's why Hashem had to destroy them. And then he skips. We're going to skip a little bit. It's a long piece. And the next line, you don't have to understand it at all. It's a bit mystical, but we'll just get into the next part. Masha Eken Klipis Yishmael, which is not the case with the shell of Yishmael, She Yetzer Hara De Taiva, which is also Yetzer of Taiva, Isa Bazar Kaddish. We're going to say, we'll see later, the Zohar says about Yishmael, Shel Yispat De Lagamri. It wasn't totally nullified. Rak De Nikra Lov, and it's called white. Command the Sachiu Matmil Misuvusei, like someone who goes to the mikveh to get away from his disgustingness. Fine. Va'omer Dilmul Yetzahara. Ah, here's the point we need now. And the Gemara says, the Zohar says, if not for the Yetzahara, Chedvasa Deshmaitza Lo Lahavi, the joy of learning Torah would not exist. You'd never enjoy learning Torah if you didn't have Taiva, if you didn't have a Yetzah. Shezeh tachle shenivras hayetzer. This is the goal of the Yetzahara, the real point of the Yetzer. Yos cheshek v'chamido daraisa. Shev a yearning and a chamido, a chemda, a yearning for Torah.
It's like an unsatisfied desire.
That's right, exactly. Exactly. That's a better translation, Howard. An unsatiable desire for pleasure. And we know that's true. Talmud says, he who has 100 wants 200. Who has 200 wants 400. The more you have, the more you need. That's the way it is with physical pleasures. As someone told me, the new comment, the new line they say, that people, I said it before, people are bored to debt. Not bored to death, bored to debt. They're so bored, they have to come up with something new to do. They'll borrow money to be able to have the next fantasy becoming realized, and it puts them into debt. I think that might be one of the Rosh Hashanah drushes. I think that might resonate. Right? Bored to debt. D-E-B-T. Because, you know, because you're not happy. What do you have? You have a house already, a two-car garage, air conditioning, a nice backyard, a swimming pool in the backyard, right? You still have to go to the Bahamas. Why? What's the problem here? You got a pool, you got air conditioning, you got everything you want. It's comfortable. You have a 4,000 square foot home? No. We have to go to the cottage too. Why? I understood. 100 years ago, there was no air conditioning. Your mom was schwitzing. Okay, you go to the cottage, a few degrees cooler. You need to relax. I understand. Yeah. But our houses are cottages. They're nicer than cottages. What? Okay, but you understand what I'm saying. But I'm saying, you need more. It doesn't stop. So that seems, wow, God, you're really cruel to give us such a desire. No! Hashem wants you to believe you can finish us. I can finish it. What do you mean? I finished one page. It's not enough, one page. It's not enough, one page. There's 2,500 pages out there. I can't be satisfied with one page. I have to have it all. Ah, that's the guy who's going to be a scholar. And that's what God put into man. And that's what Gemara says. Hashemar Gemara. If this disgusting Yetzer comes to you and says, hey man, let's have a little party. Mashchol Beit HaMedrash, schlep him into the study hall. Meaning to say, Hain Limshach Achemda, pull those drives, Lios Chamina Deraisa, and turn those drives of mundane base pleasure into the pleasure of studying Torah. Now we understand the last set of underlines. Ulachain, there we can understand, Hagodol Mechavero, someone who's greater than his friend. Mitzad sheshakua bo chamida daraisa b'yoser. Why are you greater than your friend? Because you have a strong yearning for Torah. Meaning to say, as we learned in the Balatanya, there are bigger neshamas and smaller neshamas. What do you mean? If you have a big neshama, it means you have big drives. Big drives. And thank God he's been sublimating it for Torah. Ah, but it's a big drive. What if that big drive gets a little bit off course? Zelu mazel selukim, and Hashem has made one force juxtaposed to another. Okay, misgaber etzlenu ganachem do letzad epoch. So therefore, there's a strong yearning to the other side. Masha ein ke misha ein magul v'atzma chamida doraisa, as opposed to someone who doesn't grow the yearning for Torah. Gam hachmina lehepoch ein loisgabers. He doesn't have that much drive negatively in the other direction as well. That's why great people could do great averos, because they have big, big yetzers. Thank God they're using the same way. But imagine if a Torah scholar would just decide to start taking lots of vacations and would stop learning Torah. That yetzer is going to look somewhere else. That's why they have a bigger yetzer hara. They could do much worse averos than your regular amaretz, as it were. The fact that they are a scholar means that they do love learning, and they've activated that Yetzer in a very powerful way. So it could, God forbid, go the other way. So let's bring it back to the ark. The Zemaram is Aron Atse Shittim. That's what it means when we say the ark is made of the wood of Shittim. Ke'etz Maram is Ala Torah. It's like, what do you call it? What do you call that term when it's two terms that contradict each other? It's a fancy. Who? Oxymoron. It's an oxymoron. Because the tree hints to the Torah, shenikra etzchaim, it's called the tree of life, but v'shitim meramez ala hepech, v'shitim hints to the opposite. Mitzat degol ha-godol mechaver yitzagodol, because anyone who's greater than his friend has a bigger yitzahara. So it's atzei, the tree of life, but shitim can bring shitim, shtus, foolishness. V'al yidei etzchaim the Torah, but if we use the etzchaim of the Torah, Misgaber al Yitzro, it overcomes the Yitzhara. The Kovesh Inyan Shittim, and it conquers the aspect of Shittim. Shuromas of the Rishtus and Isker, which hints to the Shtus, the silliness that we've talked before. So there's the duality that exists in life. You want to be Shtus, silly, go after your pleasures? That's what Shittim is. You want to be smart and use that power and that drive for Torah? That's what the Eitz. And that's what the Aron is supposed to symbolize. The Aron is the Ark, the Holy Torah. Ula Asid Ksiv, and later on it's going to say, Umeyen, Be'ez Hashem Yetzev, Ashokas Nachlashitim. When Mashiach comes, there's going to be a spring coming from the house of Hashem, and that's going to change the waters of Nachal Shittim. Remember, the Shittim waters was Viagra-like waters. And that water will change into being Torah waters. The Nachal Shittim, we know about that Nachal Shittim, that valley of Shittim. It says in the Medrash, the Shalznus Hoya, it was one that brought immorality. The Hamayin Garm L'maisa Hashtusim, that water brought the silly actions. Well, us in the future, Kishislab and Yetzirah, when Yetzirah will become made white, the taiva, that's that idea, the taiva becomes purified, coming to rise, go back to where it was supposed to be, a yearning for Torah. Ah, Hashem. Then that nachal will turn to become a spring from the house of Hashem, to bring the yearning for Torah Hashem. So now we understand the answer. Why it's gold on the inside, gold on the outside. Why do you need wood on the inside? Who needs the wood? It says, Vabez Aron Shalzov, and the two arcs of gold, the two inside and outside. Roms and Tamachachim, the Gemara says, it hints to Tamachachim, she had told the Gemara that his outside should be like his inside. It says in Gemara Yuma. How does that happen though? She day, she yastik batar v'lei shom, if he learns Torah with a complete heart, betoch Gemara in and out. She wrote to the establish B'kdushas Baruch, because you want to cleave to Hashem. If that's the case, a Yedei Kain, if you want that, Yuchlis Gabriel, yes, you can overcome that Yetzer of the Shittim that's inside. Lachnus Elektusha Kodesh Baruch Hu, bring it to the place of wholeness that Hashem will help you. So it's a beautiful, beautiful idea that the Rav Tzadok is telling us here. I think the whole idea of the Ark the Jewish will have is to know that the goal is to have gold on the inside, gold on the outside. You got to be pure. Got to outside of your activities have to be pure, but it's got to come from a sincerity on the inside. But what is really in the middle, the critical point, is the Atzei Shittim. Is that drive for Taiva? Is it going to be a drive used for Torah? Then the gold on the inside and the outside will be beautiful. If it's not, it could be destructive. It could be destructive. The same people who can be great scholars can be the worst immoral people in the world as well. So therefore, and you find in the secular world as well, many of the great philosophers were big polyavers. Because they had a cheshek. They used their cheshek to know more about philosophy, this and that. But that cheshek can go into terrible places as well. So the main point of this Rav Tzadok is that you have to make sure the Aron alludes to us using our tavos l'shem shamayim. Use our drives for the sake of heaven. That's what the Ark is reminding us. So what did the Jewish people mistakenly do? They are, Chofni and Pinchas, whatever interpretation you want to use, they are called immoral people, you know, on whatever level we've learned in the past. So what do? They like their lifestyle, their pleasurable lifestyle, not focused as much to Hashem as it should be in the right way. So what do? They take the Aron itself into battle, so they will win their battle so they continue to have their taivas. Hashem wasn't happy with that at all. So Hashem takes it away from you. Shows that you're not even close to what the Aron represents. Okay, so now, let's bring it back to the Plishtim and Dagon. We did not forget about Dagon at all. So now, which creature on the planet best represents the idea of Tava? The idea of lust. Having more and more and more and more. It's a fish. It's a fish. I don't know it's a fish, because what's the blessing that Yaakov gave to his two grandsons? V'yidgu l'rov bekerev haaretz. You should multiply in the midst of the land like fish. Fish multiply a lot. They're very engaged in expanding themselves. Right? In other words, that whole idea of multiplying, expanding more and more and more. Right? So they were created to be fruitful, and they did as they were told. In other words, this whole idea of taiva can be used in a very positive way, right? In other words, fish represent taiva in a holy way. The whole idea of being fruitful, multiply, you know, what images are conjured up in one's mind? know, it's got to be intimacy. Fruitful multiply, you got lots of taiva involved in fruitful multiply. The fish is the quintessential pruravu. Have lots of fish, right? But the fish did it the way they're supposed to do it. They did it at the command of Hashem. To ultimately become, to have lots of fish, so they'll have what to eat. That's what they do as they're told. Now that's good, that's good. You can understand how the plishtim, they were seafarers. They're out to expand, to have more. The whole idea of us being a seafarer means I'm a bal taiva. That's why pirates were not known to be the most moral people in the world. Why do you have to go out to the sea? Don't you have everything you have on dry land? What do you get by going to the Orient? You know, I'm giving an example, like going far away. Things you can't get over here. Feltsuchosto, you're missing things over here. What don't you have? You don't have nice wheat from the plains of Edmonton, Regina. And there's no bread, none of bread in Canada. Feltsuchos bread. Exotic things, you know, fireworks, place, you know, whatever. That only can get that in China, you know. The whole idea of going and getting silk, all these things, it's more taiva. You go on a boat, to risk your life. It's the most dangerous thing of form of travel. What are you doing it for? Hey, your mama's risking your life. What? For a taiva. It is the pshat. That the Philistines, the seafarers, were starving to death. They have to go across the ocean to bring food back. That's never the case. Want to make more money. Want to be able to have more. That's the whole idea of a seafarer. The Plishtim, you understand how the Plishtim were on the coast? Because they weren't happy enough with what? Eretz Yisrael doesn't have enough brachas. What? The spies came back and showed you gigantic fruits. If you live there, what do you need anything else? No, we have to go somewhere else to find other things. Right? They took that, so the Plishtim took their taivas and just expanded it for no real purpose. So therefore, it's very interesting how their idol is what? A fish on the one hand, in human form. This is the deeper pshat in a mermaid. The deeper pshat in a mermaid is, give me that fish-like tendency to be fruitful, multiply, and to expand and grow, and take that taiva, but take that taiva what? For a man's base pleasures. And this was what the Philistine idol was all about, and that's what represented its lifestyle, no different than today. And that's why everybody likes the Palestinians, you understand. It's not just a coincidence. You know, they have to, you know, similars like each other. Okay, so the bottom part of doggone, so now which part is Hashem going to destroy? Right? The bottom part, the part of the doggone, the fish part's okay. Because the taiva of the fish alone, that's alright. But not tied to the person. Because if the person is using it to develop his own self-aggrandizement, that's terrible. So therefore, what did the Aaron do? It broke the head and it broke the hands, because that's the part that wants to selfishly take those pleasures for its lustful wants. And that part is smashed on the threshold. Threshold symbolic of what? What's the threshold symbolic of? The point of free choice. The threshold is where you decide, does something go in, does something not go in? So I have a mezuzah. We have a mezuzah to make sure that we make the right choice. What goes into the house? What doesn't go into the house? Plishtim, Hashem says, right at that threshold, you have to make those decisions, those hands and those face, you've been making the wrong decisions, leave it over there. Right? The man part's on the threshold. On the other hand, the fish part, that could be in front of the arm. That part's acceptable. Right? And that becomes old, and we know the Plishtim were big Bali Taiva, as we saw with Shimshon. What are they doing? They got Shimshon tied up in the Colosseum over there. They have all their wives being with Shimshon to have beautiful kids. Even though they hated Shimshon, but they loved his looks. Can you imagine somebody you hate, you still want to have a kid that looks like him? That's how far the taiva went. Plishtim are quit. So now the Jews, see what's going to have to happen here is the ark's going to have to, is gone now. We failed totally. This is like the final denouement of that generation of the Shoftim that couldn't bridle the taiva in the right way. So now you've lost the ark, you totally failed. When that ark's going to come back, that's going to symbolize the return of the proper use of taiva as should be done. And finally, Chazal say, the idea of a threshold, Chazal say a person should make himself humble as a threshold, that he should be stepped on. If a person would be humble, then you would use your taivas in the right way. So this is the perfect punishment for the Plishtim, perfect punishment for the Jews, And tomorrow we will see exactly the complete level, and they should have got the message. That's the point. If they would have picked up the message, and they were smart enough people, the Plishim were smart people, they pick up the message and do some tshuva. Unfortunately for them, they don't, and tomorrow you'll see the havoc they'll be wreaked upon them. Have a good one.